Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, well, while this podcast has been on a little bit of a hiatus, that's H-I-A-T-U-S, that doesn't mean that my intake of Athletic Greens has been on any kind of a hiatus, because that just wouldn't be me being good to myself. Even during this time, Julie Buck Brooks, my sister who does all my office stuff, you can attest to the fact that these pouches still arrive, and I still go through them daily.
Takes them all the time. I open the mail. I open them. I put them on his desk or on his dresser. Imagine if we had Athletic Greens in 1981. We wouldn't have had to go to fat camp. We would have been healthy people.
That's right. You know why? Because it's 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source, superfoods, probiotics, aptogens. I mean, back in 81, nobody was talking about aptogens, and now everybody's talking about aptogens. So, hey, you do yourself a favor and you jump right into it. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do, visit athleticgreens.com/daddyissues. Again, athleticgreens.com/daddyissues. If you've ever thought, you know, maybe these guys, I'm tired of them talking about it, but damn, it sounds interesting. Now's the time. athleticgreens.com/daddyissues and do yourself a favor. Get gut health, huh? Who doesn't want that?
Go get them.
Cavalry Audio.
Just don't know anybody in 2022 that can't get on a Zoom call.
Is that me? Am I that one person?
Yeah. I'm just glad to know somebody that in 2022, after a pandemic, can't get on a Zoom call.
I Zoom all the time. I promise. I was just going to try to incorporate my headphones and really give you the vibe that I work in radio. So I was going to attach it to my iPad, and that didn't work. So
yeah, however, you realize I work with Oliver, who is basically naked and on his iPhone with no cell service, and I'm just left to do a Max Headroom interview with him while he dips in and out, freezes, and does everything else and puts his hair behind his ears. Here's one thing I wanted to say about Oliver. Because we're back doing a podcast basically out of guilt. So you're all welcome. Just kidding about that. I was on a call with Oliver today for matters that don't really pertain to this podcast. And he was about to do a shirtless scene in The Cleaning Lady. And he was freaking out. He's like, I've got gray chest hair, which I've never noticed that I've had, speaking as Oliver. And B, he's like, I feel like I'm gaining weight. He's like, it is just not pretty. So Oliver, our friend, is going to be shirtless on network television in the upcoming season of The Cleaning Lady on Fox, right on your TV. How about that?
I know a lot of women that will go nuts over that. And I think they'll fix it in post. Isn't that what they say in TV, if there's any issue?
Then I need post to follow me around. Go to the pool, go to the beach in Cabo. I need whoever post is. if to airbrush me live. Post,
I would love it. I would absolutely go crazy.
Tighten up the buttocks. I mean, he's a little bit of a drama king when it comes to this stuff, and I'm sure he'll be fine. But, you know, he's a lot of years removed from whatever that show is that's on some odd DirecTV channel at weird times of the night. Margo, what was the thing he was on? Do you know what he was
Dawson's
on?
Dawson's Creek or whatever? Isn't that one of those?
No.
Okay.
You know, Margo, hop in. What was the show he was on that was on for Rules of Engagement? I thought
of
it.
Oh, yeah. I love that show.
Yeah. Rules of Engagement. So there you go. But that's a long time ago. So now here he is. I think I saw him shirtless on that once.
Well, you've seen him shirtless in Cabo.
I've seen him shirtless. Look, I should never be shirtless. I've joked on this podcast that I shower with my shirt on if anybody else is in the house at the off chance that they walk into the bathroom. But Oliver is really comfortable with being shirtless and basically naked walking around our place in Cabo, dropping odd hairs around the kitchen area. But for some reason, he just doesn't care. However, I'm bringing all this up because he actually cared today. This is the first time he's actually had some sort of feeling of being less than.
Yeah. And being self-conscious. Welcome.
Being self-conscious. Yes, that's what I'm getting at. I've lived in a constant state of being self-conscious, as have you.
I'm here now. That's where I'm residing.
You reside in self-conscious land.
Yeah. Oh my. Well, you know that. Yeah.
I know. But okay. So here we are. We have not done a podcast for a couple of weeks. Margo and Josh have been kind enough to step in and do a little recap and a preamble, as we used to call them, and roll old episodes of Daddy Issues. Here we are recording on the 10th of August, 2022. And I have recruited my sister, Julie Buck Brooks, who is a red hot radio personality in St. Louis, Missouri, to join me, much like I had Natalie, my daughter, join me when Oliver was doing whatever Oliver was doing the last time he couldn't show up. So now I've got Julie. I'm running out of family members. Dad's dead. Mom is incapable.
I had to bring that up, and that too.
I have Trudy. I have Michelle, but she's put herself in the penalty box for this podcast because of a past appearance when we had Aaron on too. I think we're going to rectify that on his other podcast. But I'm talking throughout this whole thing because I'm going to interview you, Julie. I'm going to interview you, about us, about our family history, and maybe, just maybe, on this episode of Daddy Issues, as I talk to can I say your age?
I mean, I don't care. Just nobody ask me if Joe's older or younger than me. That's all I ask. Because he's older.
I'll just say this. You're 3 years younger than me.
I'm 50. I don't care. Say it. This isn't about that.
My 50-year-old sister and mother of three boys who are all in college, all thriving and making the family proud day after day. But now here we are, ready to talk about Joe and Julie Buck.
Should I lay down? I feel like this is going to be a major therapy sesh, or get out the Kleenex. I mean, what roads are we going to go down?
I just like I do with Oliver, I have prepared absolutely nothing for this podcast. So we're going to see where it takes us. This is like Magellan crossing an unnamed ocean.
I mean, I do this for a living. I do a radio talk show. So a lot of my inner secrets are no longer. I mean, I just let it all hang out, so to speak, which is not really a good way to say that. But I mean, I'm down. Just if you go too far, I'll let you know.
Okay. I'll start off with something easy. How does it feel to know that I am both mom and dad's favorite child?
Oh, I came to the conclusion a long time ago that I'm good with it, because you were mean to me as a kid. We fought a lot as children, but we get along really great now, which is, I don't know why or how that happened. We're so close now, but it's for sure the truth, because if you walk into our mom's room, and by the way, our mom lives at my house, lives with me. She has literally, and I am not kidding, poster size cardboard cutouts of Joe just by himself, one with Joe, just a cigar by our bathtub, one of Joe and his kids, and then another couple of Joe. I've walked by him so many times. They're huge. And for me, I was in the local little newspaper with a 2x2-inch photo. She cut it out, maybe ripped it out, didn't even get out the scissors. A 2-inch,
which is good, 2-inch
by the bathroom mirror. And that's all I got. I mean, it's obvious that you're the favorite, and I'm okay with it, because this sounds really cheesy, but you have been so good to me and you're such a wonderful brother that I get it. I mean, you are kind of the golden child, dare I say it.
Yeah. Well, we could go there. Is that what
we can go there? When we
is want. That what our was what our six half brothers and sisters all call me?
I think so. That slipped out on Facebook in a late night tirade that was later taken down by one of them. But yeah, I think
fact that you know that. So we've talked about this ad nauseum on this podcast. I'm sick of my own story because of this podcast. I'm not complaining, but my story is my story. It doesn't change. I burst into the world as a surprise to Carol Linsnick at the time and Jack Buck back in April of 1969, or at some point I was a surprise prior to April 25th of 1969. So here I am bursting into the world, and that forced a change in our dad's life, which meant that he was, you know, he had a decision to make. And the decision turned out to be he was going to marry my mom and they were going to raise me. And he at the time was married with six kids. And I would say the exit was not handled perfectly well, to be nice. And then 3 years later, Julie is born. And let's just say the six half-brothers and half-sisters, two brothers, right? Am I doing that right? Two brothers and four sisters.
Dad used to say he had eight kids and they were all boys except for five.
Right. I have eight kids. They're all boys except five.
It's right on.
And then people would clap and he would go, don't applaud. Don't applaud. Yeah. I've totaled it up. I figured for me, it took a combined 40 minutes and that's with conversation.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Did you ever hear him say that one?
Yeah. Oh, God, I knew what you were going to say. And I mean, he would have been just flat out canceled today for that, I think.
Oh, there's so many things that I wouldn't even go. It makes me sweat even thinking about some of the things that he said at banquets in mixed company that just are unbelievable, that I can't imagine coming out of anybody's mouth in any era. But everybody's like, oh, my God, that's hilarious. And the butts of the jokes were like, and it was not good when I think of it. I thought of one the other day that I'm going to tell you after we hang up on this, that I don't know that you've ever heard, but if you've heard it, you've forgotten it. And it is mind blowing. One of the jokes. Anyway. So anyway, I come along and I force this big change, and then Julie comes along, and you're right. For some reason, for the first X number of years of our lives, we fought a lot. And I don't know if that's because Dad was gone a lot. I don't know if that's because I don't know. It's impossible to go back and try to recreate, although you remember everything. I remember nothing, to try to recreate why that was the case or what the mood was in the house. I think generally speaking, we both look back on our childhood and think it was great, right?
I think for the most part, it was great. I mean, it was fantasy land in a lot of ways. We were always shielded from any actual problems. Like, no one ever told us any actual problems. Our biggest problem was our weight. Yes. And that is why we were shipped to fat camp. At one point in our childhood.
What year was that? I would say like 81.
Ooh. Yeah.
Because I went to Kanakuk for 2 years. I think it was 10 and 11. And then it was 12. which would make 1981.
You're right, because we lived at Williamsburg. Yeah, I remember that. Yes, it was. I would say 1981, and we went away. We drove. They drove us from Missouri to Massachusetts. Mom and grandma.
Like we were picked up by people in white coats. Mom and grandma drove us in a station wagon.
With wood paneling.
With wood paneling from St. Louis, Missouri to the Berkshire Mountains in Massachusetts to a quote-unquote, I mean, it's not what they billed it as, but it was a fat camp. You showed up there and for, I don't know how long we were there, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, a year and a half?
Three solids, and it was, there were so many subplots happening. They starved you. They sent me with Miss Piggy stationery, and I always read into that. And that was always upsetting.
Who sent you with Miss Piggy stationery?
Mom and grandma. I don't think they meant anything by it as an adult, but as a kid, I was like sitting there at fat camp going, why am I writing home from fat camp on note cards with a pig?
Hello, mommy. Hello. I lost 2 pounds today. Kermit.
I think I lost literally 14 pounds week one. And no one in the history of the camp had ever used the payphone until they met me. I worked these people overtime until I got a hold of the phone. I was like, I have to come home. I cannot do this. I cannot be away from home this long.
Well, the funniest thing, I had been 2 years to this camp in Missouri near Hannibal called Kanakuk.
Christian camp.
It was a Christian camp, which was, I'm not even going to go down that path, but some of the things that they scared the shit out of us with as kids. But anyway, about the world ending and blah, blah, blah. So I did that for 2 years. Absolutely miserable. Hated every second of it. Couldn't have been more homesick. Lived in a wood cabin. Slept in bunk beds. Showed up there with my steamer trunk that we all had to come there with. Laid on my bed. Was so out of sorts. The toilets in the bathroom were like the toilet where you would sit down to go to the bathroom had no stalls. So they're just out in the open. And because of that, somehow my central nervous system overrode my bodily function system. And I didn't have to sit down for damn near 3 weeks.
Ew,
which
God.
Seems impossible. But it was either that or the woods.
It can't be good for the septic tank.
No. Oh, yeah, my septic tank. So then the next year we go, Julie and I are ballooning up to some sort of odd weight.
Well, they put us Wendy's every night. My God. I mean.
Our diet was so bad.
So
as
bad.
Kids. And I don't, we look back on it like, would it have killed them to give us a salad every once in a while that didn't have nine gallons of poppy seed dressing on top
and
of it?
And if you were hungry at night, you were at the ballpark. So it was like, you know, have a hot dog before you go to bed. I mean, why weren't we obese? I mean, we would have stuff from the bakery mom would get in the morning and that's how we would kick off the day. I mean, the fact that the two of us are mobile at this point in our 50s is probably really good news.
Right. Right. So that's true. So we're driving up to this place. The name of it is Kingsmont.
You're going to hate this. You're going to hate this.
I kept saying that to you. You're like, it's not going to be a big deal. And we had to stop every 20 minutes because you had to go to the bathroom on the drive up to Massachusetts. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I said, you're going to hate it. And I had already talked because I had 2 summers worth at Kanakuk of being unbelievably homesick. And I knew what was in store for me. It was like I was shipping off to Qatar at every time I left. And I ended up talking to this guy, Doc Appleton, who created this, like, this weird, I don't know, we're probably going to get sued by Kingsmont Camp.
Yeah.
But I don't care. I was there. I'm living my truth right now. It's like it was like David Miscavige or whatever his name is. It started Scientology. This old man was a million years old. And they're like, oh, Doc Appleton's unbelievable with kids who are homesick. I got on the phone with him before I went up there. Hello. And
it was like Weekend at Bernie's. Like they propped him up in a chair.
I visited him one time in this weird house up on the hill at that place.
I was there every day.
Oh, you were?
I got to. Yes, it was like a weird porch, and He's like, no one in the history of the camp has ever been allowed to use the payphone. And I'm like, well, today, Doc Appleton, I would really like to make it happen.
So you were nine, and this guy was supposed to help me with my homesickness, and I couldn't even, we had no conversation at all. And it ended up being okay for me because I was in the section of the camp that was like, this kid could be here, this kid could not. It was the mini slim boys cabin. Yes.
You were like in the hot guys cabin for the fatties. I mean, are we allowed to say that?
Well, we were there. I mean, we were two of them.
That's what it was. I mean, you were like there was a guy named Jay that was like really good looking and would be like drop dead movie star if he lost a bunch of weight. And you were like in that was like the first.
He looked like a little heavier David Schwimmer.
Right. You were a cool kid, I think, maybe for the first time in your life. I mean, you had to change the audience a little bit, but.
I did. All of a sudden, it was like, look at me. Talking about walking around with your shirt off. I was like Tarzan walking around like, hey, look at me.
You got two stretch marks. These guys.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a B cup.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more Daddy Issues.
Anyway, so we go to this camp. We're driving up there. I'm like, just wait. You're going to hate it. And I was prepared because I knew I was going to hate it. And, day one, you're like, okay, bye, Mom. Bye, Grandma. And within an hour, you were cooked. You were done. You wanted to go home.
I was searching for you. I was like, please, I just need to see you. I just need to talk to you. Please. I think I was literally scarred. I mean, I have to now pull out my I'm an adult card and use it and say, well, so what? It probably taught me a lot of things in a lot of ways, but it was weird. I mean, when I look back as now from a view of being a mom, like that was something they did then. Now they call it fitness camp and health camp, and it's about making your life better. They would never have the junior slims or whatever it was.
Mini slim.
Like, the mini slims or whatever, like categorize you by your weight.
It was, but you're right. It was traumatizing to the point where it doesn't really ever leave you that you were shipped off as opposed to your friends who were doing whatever they were doing in the summer. And all of a sudden you're going, and then Dad visited us, took us into town.
Tell him where he took us. Oh my God.
To Haagen-Dazs.
Mm-hmm.
And I got chocolate chip. I didn't even like chocolate or chocolate chip, but I was like, what is the most fattening thing I can eat? Cause I haven't eaten anything in 2 weeks. He was up there doing a Patriots game. I took my mini slim boy cabin. Dad got tickets through Mike Torres, a former Cardinal and then Boston Red Sox pitcher. Our cabin got to go to Fenway Park. Which
I didn't get to go. Nobody told me. Mom told me, don't upset your father when he comes there. Don't make him feel bad. I had my bag packed. Forget the chocolate chip. I just wanted to get out of there. I was going to climb in a suitcase, but I had promised her that if he came there and made the point of coming there, that I would cooperate.
Yeah. Well, he came home evidently and told our mom that Julie and I were going to sue them for dropping us off at this place. But it was crazy intense in some ways. And we got to go to Fenway Park on a day when a foul ball hit a kid right over the Red Sox dugout and Jim Rice, who was playing for the Boston Red Sox. It's a famous picture in the Boston Globe or the Boston Herald, came out of the dugout or off the on-deck circle and ran into the seats and picked up this little girl. I think it was a little girl, and carried her down into the dugout and into the medical room in the Red Sox clubhouse. So even that was traumatic. I don't know. I don't know what happened to her. But yeah, that picture exists on the cover of at least the sports, if not the main paper in Boston from 1981. Anyway, you and I fought for whatever reason for the longest time. And then I don't know when that changed. When I went to college, when I was in high school.
I never came to visit you at college. I remember being on the phone with you when I was away at college, and you would, we would talk on the phone then. And then, you know, when I think when Natalie was born, I feel like that was kind of a time to bridge the gap. And then Trudy, and then we had a little freeze out going on, and then we kind of got everything back together. But I mean, I think overall, I think we have this underlying thing that no matter what, we would be there, or at least I feel like this, no matter what went down, we would be there for the other person. We have that deep, no one else knows what our life was. You're the only other human being on the planet that can relate to so many things that went on. And that's not just for us, but that's for anybody that has a sibling. I mean, there's a lot there, a lot of connections, a lot of memories.
Yeah. And I think the perception would be from the outside. And I think this is true. I mean, I would categorize us growing up as upper middle class. Like, I think the perception would be, oh, their dad's a Hall of Fame announcer. And I'm not, so we didn't need for anything, but we were not like old money rolling in it.
Yeah.
None of that. And you know, dad was pretty strapped most of the time with the money he was making, the money that was coming in, the money that was going out. And for a lot of the reasons
we said, did we? Huh?
No, but that was actually gonna be my point. When you said we were shielded from anything that was going wrong, I think that's the role of good parents. It wasn't thrown in our face if anything was going wrong. And I think that you only know what you know. You only know, that's all we knew. That's how we grew up. We didn't know if it was normal. We didn't know if it was abnormal. And we're not really filling in a lot of blanks because a lot of it's not totally fair, because not everybody's on this Zoom call at the moment, but you know, you don't know what you don't know. So we thought everything was perfect. And then you look back and you're like, I don't know, that was kind of odd, or this happened. And now as adults, it's like, that wouldn't happen
that
in my life.
We didn't see him for 2 weeks. Like, what was going on? I mean, I don't know. But, and also with the fat camp thing, I just want to say this. In defense of our parents, specifically our mother and our grandmother, who were probably the catalysts in scraping up the money to send us to this camp. On the other side of that, you had two kids that were pretty heavy, and we were being teased, and it was interfering with sports and social things. And so now as a parent, as awful as that was, I can look back, since the show is called Daddy Issues, and say I kind of understand where they were coming from. I think at the time that they were trying to, you know, do us a solid, help us out. And
I just think, you know, they didn't know how, because
yeah, and they didn't know what to do.
Whether it was cooking or grocery shopping or late night eating or whatever it was. And this, we're not going to turn this whole podcast into talking about this stuff. But I don't think we also at that time lived next to an endocrinologist. Remember the doctor that was right next door? And I actually think, now that I think about this, it was his idea for us to go to this place. And I can't imagine mom, you know, searching in an encyclopedia or whatever was around back then. It wasn't the internet, to find out where she could send her two heavy set kids that were shopping in the Husky section. That was from the doctor's magazine. Yeah. That was the doctor's idea, I think, which, you know, that I just think that's how that came to be. But you're right. I mean, I've also, this is called Daddy Issues, and I do feel like, you mentioned Natalie and Trudy, my two girls, and now Blake and Wyatt, the two boys, you could not have given more of yourself to my kids than you have. Like, they know that they have somebody in you that they can rely on if, you know, anything were to happen to me or whatever, you would be their first call. You are their first call, even though I am here a lot of the time, because You know, I just pulled open my drawer before we came on here, and it's your writing. You basically run my finances in my, if you go down, I have no idea what's coming in and out of this office.
You could guess the passwords, I'm pretty sure. I think you could probably figure it all out.
Yeah, you got that weird one that I don't get, that one that you've always tell it to me. I'm like, what the hell is that?
Yeah, I'm not even going to say what it is because it would be easy to figure out, too easy probably. But I will say that since I have three sons, so for me with the two girls, that's as close as I'm going to get to ever having a daughter. And so that in my life has worked out beautifully for me. I kind of have the best of all worlds. And I also have twins that are 22. And now Joe has these four-year-old twin boys that have just been like a bridge and just, I don't know, it sounds cheesy, but like this burst of joy and a rainbow in our family. Just, I mean, it's a lot of work with two little boys, man. They are so much fun. And it's like getting back to go and live this. I think they think I'm their grandma. I took them to Target the other day and I said, do you think people think I'm your grandma? And they're like, no, Juju, that's what they call me. But I'm like, I think they probably do, but that's okay. We have such a great time. You've got four awesome kids. I've got three amazing sons and we're just blessed. And you do a lot for my kids too. So, you know, I mean, there's a give and take there. And I think we both appreciate each other a lot.
Yes. So I agree. We came out of this at times odd situation, but, and we grew up and live in a smallish town that idolized our dad. And it was at times, I mean, it was a wonderful life being able to grow up, especially for me at Busch Stadium and be around players' kids, be around players, shag fly balls before games, be the bat boy, be, you know, just be on the Cardinal charter to learn that's the reason I'm doing what I'm doing is because I had a master's class.
So true. Yeah.
In broadcasting through dad. And thank God dad was the kind of person who wanted to take me and us on road trips and, you know, learn what it's like to get out of St. Louis and learn what it's like to navigate an airport and whatever it might be, little things that you learn. I mean, I grew up fast and I was always around adults when I was a little kid. So I grew up, I never was like a little goofy kid. I was always pretty willing to stuff that down. And I knew if I was going to be around dad or I was going to go on road trips, I had to act like older than I was, or I wasn't going to get to go because he wouldn't put up with it.
In a way that's kind of sad to me because, and it all turns out great and look at us now and life is wonderful. We can't complain. So this is not a woe is me, but there's a little part of me that feels badly for you because I feel like because dad was older and because dad was gone so much that a lot of burden was put on you, not like to go milk the cows or whatever, get the eggs out of the hen house or whatever, nothing like that. Not like, you know, Little House on the Prairie, but more so like mom would say, since dad would be out of town, cause I was the unruly one, not Joe was perfect. We know that. But she would say, if you don't do this homework right now, I'm going to tell Joe. And I would be like, I mean, there was this like fear of that you were this person that I always wanted to please, even though you're only 3 years, yes, older than I am. You were like my authority figure and you still in a way are like a brother, but a father figure, like it or not. I mean, you are my sounding board for a lot of things. And
because it was a different time and it's hard to realize now with cell phones, FaceTime, everything else that we all, you know, I travel a lot, certainly a lot less now than I used to, but my girls, I don't think ever felt like I was not there for large chunks of time. Maybe October was a bad month, but I was always around and made sure to check in and made sure if it had become
the effort to do that. I mean, that's also the difference.
Yeah, you know? No, I mean, that was my number one priority was the girls. And now it'll be the girls and the boys that are here. And I, you know, if I get in late from a road trip and they got to get up for school, I'm going to drag my ass out of bed and make sure that they see my face. And that was always very important to me. But this was a time where dad was doing day-to-day Cardinal baseball, Then football and baseball would collide. He would leave and do Monday Night Football on the radio. He would do some Sunday TV in the NFL while he was doing Cardinal baseball, which would start like right about now, September, October at times if the Cardinals made the postseason, or he would do CBS National Radio postseason games. He was doing a radio morning program show here in St. Louis. So there were times where he would be gone for 2 weeks, and there was no, hey, let's call Dad on his cell phone and get him off the golf course or call him before he does the broadcast. The only time he really called home was when he was in the Camo X radio booth because they had free phone lines.
Yeah, free long distance.
To call long distance. And and so we didn't see our dad for, and again, not complaining, it is what it was. We didn't see our dad. I hate that we have to always disclaim that, but whatever. That should be baked in, but by now on this podcast. But there were large chunks of time where we didn't see Dad. So somebody had to be, you know, not the, I guess, a father figure in essence at home. And if I was that for you, I was not aware that Mom would threaten, like telling me that you didn't do your homework or whatever. That's absurd. I was 12 and you were 9, and like you were going to get punished by me.
Yeah, I was afraid. I wanted you to like me. I wanted you to think I was cool. I wanted you to, I don't know. I didn't want you to be disappointed in me.
Wow.
Are we having a moment? I guess not. I said, are we having a moment?
No, I mean, I always just, I didn't ever really understand the extent of that. But Mom leaned on me to, I do know that. And I do know that there were times where you were a little bit, let's say, more difficult than I was as a kid. And I, yeah, you, no?
Yeah, I was. But not, they make it like I was, but it wasn't like I was strung out on drugs somewhere. I was in trouble for being late to school by 30 seconds or talking in class. I mean, or playing a terribly thought out prank on a teacher or something along those lines. I wasn't
looking
like,
for attention, just looking for your looking own.
Right. And I was, that's what I was doing. I wasn't like, you know, sleeping with people or doing anything that I was, when you really look at it, I now from an adult point of view, as I was the bad one. I mean, I really,
no, it was like, all like threatening to run away and then run away for an hour and then you're back. As we were too hungry. I mean, you weren't going to run away. We had to eat.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, come on. How long and how far could you go? We had no money in our pockets and we had no real chores to speak of. We had no allowance.
No.
We just kind of were there.
Yeah. We were just kind of at the ballpark and you were with Dad and I was in the basement of the stadium babysitting players' kids and hanging out with the family. So I think we have a different perspective from that standpoint. And that's why I wanted to go with him on road trips. I didn't really care that much about the baseball aspect of it.
Yeah. You just wanted to be by the players, the players' wives and their kids. Cause you, I mean, I don't profess to know what went on in the family room in the ballpark, but you were basically the babysitter or the watcher for all these little kids that were running around while Mom was up in the seats and Dad was playing in the game.
Yeah.
Meaning their dad.
That was my childhood, but that's kind of where I hung my hat as a kid. And, you know, I guess they would say that, you know, I was an old soul, which I think is just a code for maybe a weird kid.
No.
No, kind of.
Old soul means mature beyond your years. You were not a weird kid.
I was weird in the sense that I wasn't your typical kid. I mean, most kids wanted to be out like partying with their friends. I wanted to be babysitting at the ballpark. That was my jam. It's weird, but it worked. And I'm lifelong friends with those people still today. So.
Yeah, but they also trusted you with their kids, and they also you were always a trustworthy kid. So I don't know. It was an ideal childhood in many ways, and I don't know. We're spinning our wheels on this, but now you're in the media, and what I was thinking of today when I had you on, when I knew I was going to have you on, was I know what it's like to be Jack Buck's son and follow him into these booths across America and to do baseball and football and all these different sports and be compared to a Hall of Fame announcer. And now you have another layer, because in the town we live in, you're Jack Buck's daughter, you're Joe Buck's sister. Natalie has that, who's, going to act and is acting. And, that guy on TV, that's his daughter. And, for people old enough, that's Jack Buck's granddaughter, whatever it might be. But in this small town, I would imagine that gets a little tiring.
You know what? I could say that it does, because in some ways it does. But at the end of the day, if you weigh it all out, for me personally, there's so many good things that have come out of that for myself, my kids, our mom, your kids, and really the place where we live, which is St. Louis, Missouri, that I could pull negative things out of it if I wanted to, but I choose to just say, oh my gosh, it makes me feel good to be able to pop into our local drugstore, over to the companion sandwich shop, and have 25 people say hello in 2 minutes. Now for you, it's different. Not everybody recognizes me. I'm on the radio. I'm in St. Louis, Missouri. You go anywhere and you really can't be as anonymous as I am. So I can kind of take that card out of the deck as much as I want to, so to speak, reveal as much as I want to, in a lot of cases where people know you and they know what you look like. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But I mean, do you struggle with the idea that the only reason you're on radio, with the self-doubt stuff, just like me, the only reason you're doing this is because you're Jack Buck's son. The only reason why you're doing this is because you're Jack Buck's daughter. Like, do you deal with that? Is that the voice inside your head? Yeah.
Of course it is. I mean, I would be lying if I said that wasn't there. I mean, we have a text line at the radio station on the Carney show, the Big 550 KTRS, where we get texts from listeners and they will sometimes say stuff like that. I mean, I have one guy that texts in all the time and he calls me Julia. My name's Julie. And he's like, you're so braggy. Look, I was talking about the kind of apples that I like Honeycrisp apples. And he's like, sure, only you would be able to afford those fancy apples. I'm like, oh my God, I can't even talk about what kind of apples I like without being criticized. So that's there. And then there's that little piece of, even coworkers, or even sometimes people that you work for want to put that little thing in there. But I've been on the radio since I was in my early 20s, and it is what it is. I mean, I do the best I can. I still do it. And I'll do it as long as it works out.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more Daddy Issues.
But I don't think you realize how good you are. I remember being with Dad, and you were on Y98, I think, and we were listening to you, and he's like, she's really good.
And oh my God, that blows my mind.
What?
That he would say that.
Like, well, I talked about it with Oliver. We talked to this medium who can definitely speak to the dead and has had many multiple conversations with our dad. And that's the message that keeps coming through from him of woulda, coulda, shoulda. Like, I wish I had said more while I was alive about how proud I am of you. And I would assume, because if you believe in any of this stuff, and I'm on the fence about a lot of it, but he said take care of you, meaning Julie, and I would imagine that if you did it, you would hear the same message. And whether it's true or not, I do feel like he felt he would, if you could talk to him now, he would say, I should have said more about how proud I was, because he just removed himself from it. Overall, it was a positive, because he wasn't on my neck like, hey, good job on the home run call, but you should have called the ground ball to shortstop differently. He just was like, hey, my name could have been Joe Johnson and it wouldn't have mattered. He wasn't like, hey, let me tell you how to do this. You screwed this up. That was good. This was bad. That was a great gift that he gave me, because I don't know, I might have resented it and been like, oh, well, screw you. I'm not doing this because I can't take the criticism from a Hall of Fame announcer as I'm just getting going. So he really just kind of, you know, he would brag to all of his friends and umpires and other players that I was doing what I was doing, but he never said it to me. But I'm telling you that he said that to you about you.
I sat in the living room with him when you were calling your first World Series, and he got up and he stood in front of, remember that big console TV we had with the wood all around it? And during your call at the end of the World Series, and he had his arms crossed and his toothpick in his mouth, and just tears were streaming down his face. It was one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. I'll never forget that moment. I mean, he was so proud of you, and where he didn't call and run to the phone and gush over it.
That's my story. I called home after that 96 World Series, which was my first. I was 27 and doing it in the Bronx and Yankees and Braves, and I was doing a recap into the camera, and we get off the air after the end of game 6, which was the last game of the series. And I called and he answered, and you know, I said, well, what'd you think? And he's like, what time's it come on? Like, he didn't watch it. And then he said, it was great, Buck. And then he handed the phone to mom, and
because he couldn't talk.
Right. So then she, you know, oh my God, that was so good. We're so happy, and that was unbelievable. You did that, and you called your first World Series. And then the next day I talked to mom, and she said he was crying so hard he couldn't talk. So he didn't want to cry into the phone. But there's that. And that it just was to such an extreme.
Right. And honestly, the best times I had with him were traveling, or when we traveled with the Cardinals, but also when I saw a completely different side of him. Again, since this is daddy issues, when I was pregnant with my twins and my husband was working a lot, we were both immature. He was going out with work people after work, and I'm sitting here going, hello, I'm pregnant with twins. I need your support here. I need this. I need that. And dad was around for the most he'd ever been around in my life. And this is right before he ends up dying. But in 2000, where he would go with me to ultrasounds and to see he went to see the boys because I had so many because I was having twins. You know how that is now.
Yes.
That there are so many ultrasounds, and somebody had to go with me, and mom would go, Jeff would go, but sometimes dad would go. And the crying gene would turn on immediately, and he'd be, how about that? I mean, looking at these two baby
boy. Probably
never
seen an ultrasound, by the way.
No. And then he was so protective of me. I remember going down to spring training and him setting up a meeting with the late Daryl Kyle's wife, the pitcher for the Cardinals. At the time, they had twins. He'd set up a meeting for me to meet with her to talk about twins. I was like, well, I mean, I don't know what to say to her about twins. But he was really like the complete opposite of what it was when we were growing up. He was so hands-off. And then at this stage of my life, he was so protective and hands-on.
Yeah. So I go back to, there is some truth in that I just like Oliver does with his dad, where he's kind of gone the opposite and declined work offers because he felt like it was going to take him away from his family, and he just wants to be there for his three kids. That, you know, reluctance to give feedback and or tell kids how proud a parent is of them, I go the other way. Like I'm, you know, whatever they do. And it's totally genuine. It's not made up. I've never lied about that. But the accomplishments or things that they do, I get far greater satisfaction out of anything Natalie or Trudy or now Blake or Wyatt does than anything I've ever done. I don't care about that.
the first thing Natalie ever did was a little play at a high school, and she was four. And she was an adaptation of Peter Pan. And here is this little peanut of ours on the stage. And I don't know if she had like a line or sang a little song. I think she had like a little solo of about five words. And you were there, and you literally, it was silence other than her doing her thing. You literally let out a yelp because you got so choked up. I know you don't remember anything, so I'm telling you I was there. But it was so sweet because it was so genuine. Like just this.
But Dad had that. Like Dad joked that he would cry at the sight of a good.
It was in there, but he just didn't show that a lot.
I thought he showed it a lot, but he just kind of squeezed it down, but he never followed it with any conversation. He would get teary and he would get overly emotional at, like, which I do now at stupid shit like America's Got Talent or whatever, because of the backstory. I'm like, oh my God, this is the most unbelievable triumph of all time. And, you know, I'm like that with the girls. And yeah, I do remember that. It doesn't matter what they do. I'm Natalie speaking at my wedding with Michelle, and I had to turn my chair and face the other way. It was so embarrassing because I was like, snot was falling out of my nose and I couldn't stop. I could barely hear her because I just was crying so much because she had the guts to get up there in front of all those people and talk about me as a dad. You know, that was the most, I don't know, the most emotional I think I've ever been in my life was watching that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. So when Oliver talks about that stuff, about kind of going the polar opposite of his dad, I think about that a lot, that, you know, just being more verbal with my children or Michelle or anybody who's doing anything for me. I'm always like, hey, I just want to tell you that, what a great job. And I think being the son of, or in your case, the daughter of somebody like our larger than life looming presence that is Dad, forces you, unless you're a complete asshole, to try to kill everybody with kindness, because they're probably predisposed to thinking you're going to walk in thinking you're the king or the queen, and you want to go, no, I don't feel that way at all, which we don't.
You want to prove the point.
Yeah.
That you're not that
yeah.
way.
Yeah. So it actually works out. The net of it is good, because you don't, unless you just take it all in and you're just insufferable, which I'm sure happens, but I don't think you would last very long in this business. I think you'd get flushed out.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that it's, you know, I'm lucky to do what I do, just being in radio, and what I do compared to what you do is not the same. It's not, I mean, I'm on AM radio in the middle of the day, in the middle of America, you know, but it's a daily thing and I enjoy it. And tune into the Carney Show.
On the Big 550.
But
we've gone this whole time and I only want to go a couple more minutes. And we haven't really talked about Mom. Mom was an actor on Broadway, took acting classes, had this career, and really did take everything that she had done to that point when she got pregnant with me and just kind of took that and put that to the side and became Jack Buck's wife and Joe, and then eventually Julie Buck's mom, and was as involved as any parent, you know, almost enough for two, because Dad was not involved that way. So we were so lucky to have such a strong mom that could handle Dad being gone as much as he was while raising two kids. And I think did, you know, it wasn't perfect, but did an unbelievable job for, you know, fat camp notwithstanding.
Right. I feel like we kind of raked her over the coals at the beginning with that. I mean, I feel like we give her a pass on that. Looking at it as parents, we kind of get where they were coming from. They were reaching for help, and that was the only help they could find. The only life preserver was in Great Barrington, Massachusetts.
Is that where that was?
I don't know where the heck it was, but it was somewhere in Massachusetts. Yeah. What'd you call it earlier? The Berkshires. That's what you called it.
That's where it was, in the Berkshire.
Okay, the Berkshire. We were in the Berkshire.
It was near Dad's hometown of Holyoke, Massachusetts, which we went through when he was a Depression era kid. And, you know, it's a working town. And so we got to see where Dad was born and grew up. And, you know, we had a strong mom, and she was a very strong, opinionated woman. And now in her approaching mid-80s, a lot of that is still the case. I think I talked to my therapist about this yesterday, Heather, about, you know, the way I kind of lash out, to be completely honest, when I see her kind of failing, or I when she's changed and aged, it like makes me mad. Like I get mad with it, and it's irrational.
Everything, and then it goes along and goes along and goes along, and then boom.
Well, explode. I just don't like to see her not as she was as a 40-year-old. That's hard for me. And I'm sure that is for anybody who has a parent who's aging. But to see mom, you know, she is still funny as hell. And she remembers, on one hand, she can't, you know, you live it, but she won't tell, she can't tell you if she took her medicine
that morning. But you can start a sentence
that we used to laugh about. And I mean, she's fast as anybody in the room with delivering a line or being funny. Or, I mean, it is pretty remarkable that she is that quick at that age, when, you know, some things work and some things don't. But we know this. We've got a mom who, if anything went wrong, would do anything she possibly could, including, I think, killing somebody. To help us.
Yeah.
She would kill somebody for us.
Literally. And she would, or she'd clean it up the best she could. She's not good at cleaning, but she would do the best. We would never put
her in jail. We'd be caught because she
would be so in jail. But our kids too.
Yeah.
They have an ally in our mom. She's not like a distant, there's grandma kind of thing. She's Nani. She's a part of their day-to-day life. Of course, she might go down the line and call all seven of them 8 times a day until somebody picks up the phone. But
she'll get stuck on my number, and it's like, hello? Oh, I didn't mean to call you. I meant to call Mary Ellen. Then I hang up. I'm like, Mom, I'm with the boys. Stop. Oh, I'm sorry. 2 minutes later, ring. Hello? Oh, I did it again. It's like, okay, Brittany. Stop calling. How do you remember my number? But
that's the remark. And it's
she remembers Michelle's mom's phone number. She remembers, and we're painting this picture. She's really good.
She's great, and she's beautiful outside, inside, all of those things.
Yeah, she's funny. She's, you know, the life of the party.
She's available.
She's available. Please, somebody swoop in. Anybody from the greatest generation on down, just.
She'd be quite a companion.
DM Margot Carmichael at Daddy Issues, and we'll set you up with our mom. We're going to need a brief, like a one-page financial statement from you, whoever you are.
A private jet would be nice.
Like a headshot, although she's not that picky.
But she's got a good head of hair. I mean, she's a beautiful woman, our mother.
Yeah.
She still is beautiful.
Well, I just came back from my second hair transplant with Dr. Parsa Mohebi, who we've had on this podcast. She's like, I mean, the things you have done, I gave you bad genes on the hair. I wish I could give you all my hair. I'm like, I wish you could too.
But she looks at me and says,
it's your dad's fault.
It's your dad. She looks at me and says, oh, she's like, your hair looks like it's thinning. You know, your father's sister was totally bald. I'm like, okay, great. I'm like, whoa. I've heard that so many
times. And we just bought you some new Miss Piggy stationery.
Thank God I can write you notes.
Yeah.
From jail after the murder, just to tie it all together.
All right. Well, thanks for stepping in for Oliver Rutledge Hudson.
Happy to report.
You crushed it. I feel like people are either going to really appreciate us bearing our souls or never listen to this again. But that's fine either way.
They're either loving it or they're throwing up, one or the other.
Yeah.
I didn't get really to meet Josh and Margo.
Well,
and
Josh is under the weather.
Oh.
And Margo is, all she is the third box up here, and all I see is her name. She's coming. There she is.
She's not on mine, but we established that I don't know how to work a Zoom. So.
That's because on your phone, it just shows the person who's talking.
There it is.
Back and forth. So
were you sleeping? Was that what happened? You were asleep?
No. I sit here and I take notes and I make notes about what socials I'm going to post and how I'm going to cut it. And yeah, no, this is a great episode.
We can send you some old Chubb pictures.
Oh, yeah. Those.
Yeah, no, this is a good episode. I mean, you talk about Julie a lot, so I think that it's nice for people to finally get to.
This is our own sibling revelry.
Yeah.
I know what we should do is start our own podcast and actually call it Sibling Rivalry, which is what every major host, like God love them, Steve Harvey, whatever, when we went on the Family Feud, everyone calls Oliver and Kate's podcast Sibling Rivalry. We should do Sibling Rivalry. And then that
Hashtag Sibling Rivalry.
Hashtag.
Think about all the wrong mail we'll get.
Think of all the merch that we could keychain. Uh-huh.
Loved you in Almost Famous, and that shirtless scene in The Cleaning Lady was amazing.
Oh, he's
hashtag sibling
he
rivalry.
Was so nervous this morning. I never see Oliver nervous like that.
He was nervous. Margo was on the call. She saw it.
Guy away with so much more than women, Margo. I mean, they can pull it off. He'll do great.
Are you kidding?
I can't tell you. Seen his butt. So, I mean, he's not shy.
I've seen more of Oliver's body than I've seen of most other people's in this world.
She's, she holds Oliver's career in her hands, basically.
God bless.
And his finances and everything else.
All right.
Goodbye, everybody. Thank you. Bye. Thanks, Julie. Bye.
All right, love you.
Love you.
Bye, guys.
Listen to Daddy Issues on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Daddy Issues is a production of Cavalry Audio and iHeartMedia, produced by Margo Carmichael.
Sound engineering and editing by Josh Windisch.
Executive produced by Joe Bach, Oliver Hudson, Dana Brunetti, and Keegan Rosenberger.